Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I'm chatting with John Kaiser, founder and editor of Kaiser Research. Now, John, one of the major themes within the financial markets has been this continued rotation, especially when you look at different sectors within the broad averages. However, you can also carry that rotation theme over to the resource sector. Clearly, we've had a bit of a correction going on here over 7 months now for the precious metals, gold specifically. So money has more or less rotated out of gold after clearly rushing in as gold ran higher up to that 2100 level. But even now, we're seeing rotation into a lot of the base metals stocks and base metals in general. Look at what copper's doing, and even nickel continues to run higher. Base metals across the board are doing well. We've seen a little bit of a rotation out of the energy metals, but that could also be because energy metals also had a massive run higher over the last few months. How are you seeing this rotation theme going to play out and continue within the resource sector, John?
Well, the backdrop is the idea that electrification of the transportation sector is now unstoppable. With the Biden administration coming in, this really gives legs to it, with car makers like GM declaring that we do not plan to be selling any more internal combustion engines after 2035. So that has got everybody thinking about the clean energy technologies that are going to go into providing both the energy, the electricity for all these electric cars that are going to be charging themselves, you know, 2030 and beyond, but also into the materials used up by electric vehicles. And the big sector that attracted a lot of attention was the battery metals. So lithium, even though the lithium carbonate price has only increased from sort of $2.60 a pound to $4 a pound, and lithium stocks were pretty dead, in the last 2 months, they have really taken off very sharply, exponentially. And most importantly, they have pulled in very big financing. And that's the market recognizing that, yes, even though the lithium price is still pretty poor, as this electric vehicle build-out continues to progress, there will not be enough lithium available. And if some of these technologies, solid-state battery technologies, if they allow lithium metal to function as the anode of the battery, well, then we definitely do not have as much lithium. And so the lithium stocks all did well, but they have stalled out, and the market now looks around, well, what other metals? Copper, of course, has been Robert Friedland's favorite for many years, and copper is doing very well, in part because China's economy is booming. They spent more money on fiscal stimulus last year, $5.6 trillion, than they did in 2009 in response to the 2008 financial crisis. So while copper is an obvious one that people are looking at, the rare earths have also attracted the market's attention. People realize that neodymium and praseodymium as the permanent magnet ingredients, we're going to need a lot of this, a lot more than even China is able to produce right now. And in terms of having diversity of supply and hedging against China and United States really going off the rails in their relationship with each other, we need these light rare earth deposits elsewhere in the world to be developed over the next decade to feed all these electric vehicle motors. And the area that I'm quite interested in is that of heavy rare earths. And we've talked about how all of these come from China's ion absorption clay deposits in southeastern China. And these are a finite resource. Even China will deplete them. And the heavy rare earths, dysprosium and terbium in particular, are key minor inputs to the permanent magnets. And if we're going to have these, you know, the entire car fleet electric, we're going to need to develop new sources of the heavy rare earths. And ironically, That was the theme, supposed to be the theme of Rare Earth Mania 1.0, which ran between 2009 and 2011. It was a shortage of the heavy rare earths that were going to be the problem, and you were supposed to look for deposits that had a meaningful amount of heavy rare earths, and that ended up being swept aside by the fact that the Chinese put the supply squeeze on all the rare earths, so everything went way up, and the heavy rare earth component got lost in the shuffle. But I think right now we're seeing the light rare earths get a lot of attention, but we're soon going to see an interest go back into where are we going to get the heavy rare earths from that are needed for these permanent magnets to keep them from losing their magnetism at high operating temperatures.
So, John, any thought where these deposits could be located and also time frame? How quickly do we need these to actually be developed to continue on this kind of EV electrification narrative?
So China right now supplies pretty much all of the heavy rare earths. And heavy rare earths, I've estimated, are about 10 to 15% of the total rare earth supply, which is now up around 150,000, 160,000 tons per year. Now, the heavy rare earth supply is not going to be a problem in the short term unless China decides to curtail exports of it. And there are signs that this could happen because they've started floating proposals to clean up the rare earth sector, and it's really the heavy rare earth production portion that is the most wasteful and inefficiently run with highly downstream polluting emissions. So there is a near-term risk that that supply may cease to become available. The problem is you cannot make these available in the short term, but you have to start thinking about them now and just pray that China is going to continue to allow these to be made available. And in the last cycle, there were projects like Quest Rare Minerals Strange Lake Deposit, which is the biggest and richest heavy rare earth enriched deposit in the world. It's in a very remote location, and it's now owned by a private group. There is Norra Char, which is a lower grade version in Sweden. It's owned by Leading Edge Materials. And their struggle is to deal with the not in my backyard opposition in the general vicinity of the project, come up with a way to make those people happy. And then there's projects like Namibia Critical Metals Lofto project in Namibia, in which JOGMEC is now funding to earn up to 74%. And that will all go into the Japanese machine. So now the question becomes, well, are there any other potentially interesting sources? And one company that I've owned for quite a few years, primarily for its gold potential, is called Endurance Gold. And they have a project called Bandito in the southeastern part of the Yukon, which was first recognized in the 70s. And it's a giant nepheline syenite intrusion, sort of 6 kilometers by 3 kilometers, billions of tons of this stuff. And there's lots of rare earth in the vicinity. And this thing has never been drilled. It's been explored even by the old Unocal Molycorp, looked at it in 1987. It has niobium associated with it. But work done by Endurance Gold in 2011-12 identified quite high-grade samples within the red syenite that are 76% heavy rare earths. So this stock has been going up in the last couple of weeks because of its Reliance Gold projects, where they're finally put together a model of what's going on and why they think they have a million ounce plus potential medium grade target there. But at the same time, people have noticed that the Bandito project could end up stealing the show sometime next year. They can't get much done this year in terms of drilling because it's in an area that's withdrawn from staking and in consultations for settlement of land claims with the Liard First Nation. It's important to get this done because to the east is the shale gas basin, for which could provide shale gas production. But they could get the LIDAR surveys done, more sampling, more trenching, because what's going to be the what the hope is that within this large body, there are high-grade, heavy rare earth-enriched zones that could become the future supply for the world's non-Chinese heavy rare earth demand.
John, do you see anything upsetting this trend, though, or even slowing it down? Because right now it seems like everybody is talking about this electrification trend, and that's why a lot of these companies and sectors have run, and even some of these companies that don't really have, it seems like, a whole lot going for them, except for maybe some key metal in its name. Do you see anything slowing this trend down?
I don't really see a slowdown. In fact, I see an acceleration. Last week, the National Academies Press published a report that they've been working on for the past couple of years called Bringing Fusion to the U.S. Grid. And this 80-90 page report is fascinating because what it has done is assembled everything required for going beyond experimental fusion projects to a pilot scale demonstration plant that solves all the problems still plaguing fusion energy and defines the cost needed to go to commercialization by 2050. And fusion energy is the holy grail of the energy sector. And the problem with it so far is that, yeah, they can get it to work, but it ends up using up more energy than it produces. Right now, it's what it produces is 67% of what it ends up consuming. So the goal is to get it to that number one and slightly better, where the energy produced by fusion generates its own fuel going forward. And they've outlined all these technical issues that are required to be solved. And the plan is to, by 2040, have this thing executed. It is a Manhattan Project scale concept, which would create a non-radioactive, carbon-free baseline foundation for the future of, you know, 2050 and beyond. So if we can keep our, you know, climate up, our temperature gain to 1.5 degrees Celsius, like everybody is pledging to do, by then we could have a combination of renewables and fusion energy, which then eliminates this climate change problem. And of course, this idea of making electricity the foundation of all energy isn't exactly good news for fossil fuels, but that's still 30 years away from now. But it's this vision, and because there's no military implications whatsoever, this thing will be open to the entire private sector to try and innovate, come up with solutions. It'll be government funded to some degree, but also all these groups which have pledged to reduce their carbon footprint by 2050, this will likely be a sort of an offset way where they can help fund this grand pilot scale fusion plant project to achieve this carbon-free baseline source of energy. And I think when this starts being publicized and understood, that's going to be a unifying force in the United States. People are going to say, hey, this is what the post-boomers are going to have. This is where we can funnel capital ingenuity right now. This is something that gets us out of our end times funk that it's hopeless, so we might as well just, party hardy until everything goes into the garbage can. So while there'll be ups and downs in the mood of this enthusiasm for the electrification, I think the trend is in place and it's just going to get stronger and stronger.
You see any other sectors that get hurt by this move, into fusion, or maybe developments in this space?
Well, uranium is dead if fusion becomes reality, because fusion is based on, at least their version that they're talking about, is based on deuterium and tritium, which are both isotopes of hydrogen. And interestingly, the tritium is made by inflicting fission on lithium. So here's a potential future source of lithium to create the or usage for lithium to create the tritium, which is part of the fusion fuel cycle. So uranium by 2050 would be dead, but that's 30 years from now. Whether there'll be a rush to build new nuclear plants, if this fusion idea captures the public imagination, there may be resistance to building more nuclear energy plants. And the enthusiasm for uranium in the last while has been premised on the idea that it will be uranium-fueled nuclear energy which will provide the carbon-free baseline electricity generation in that 2050 future, so that the intermittency of the renewable stuff doesn't ruin the grid. However, going parallel with that is the concept of large-scale storage, which could solve the intermittency problem of the renewables. And that's a whole new category of potential demand for various raw materials, depending on what ends up becoming the basis of large-scale battery storage for renewable energy, for, you know, storing the energy for when the wind isn't blowing or the sun isn't shining.
All right, John, we'll wrap it up here, but some interesting comments on maybe the rotation that we will continue to see and just how sustainable this move is into these more electrification metals. It sounds like you're on board for it, but again, this does take a while to continue to develop. But hey, in the meantime, there could be some good opportunities in some of these stocks. John, thanks for your time, buddy. I'll chat with you in another couple of weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
You're welcome, and thank you, Corey.